This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with John South, Senior Director, Global Threat Intelligence Development at NTT Security, to talk about the compliance challenges organizations face in 2019.
Thanks, Ian. I do a lot of work with the communications aspect of threat intelligence. So being able to communicate weekly, monthly elements of intelligence to the customers and to the world as a whole. That's where the job's focused at this point in time. As trying to coordinate that across all the various regions that we have in the GTIC and in NTT Security.
I believe you're also a professor at a local university.
I am, and I teach a class currently on cyber law and cyber compliance, with a lot of emphasis on being able to develop a security strategy, a compliance strategy, and then gluing that all together with a risk-based approach to security.
Gluing that together is where companies are struggling. Compliance is coming at them faster than they can cope with. Worse, it's coming at them from multiple countries and it conflicts. Where do they even begin to start?
They have to look at what compliance elements most impact their organization. So, for instance, if it's GDPR or if it's PCI, if it's HIPAA, whatever that main regulation is, that's got to be the start. One of the ways that I always approached compliance was to try to build a common framework that takes the elements of, like, say, HIPAA, PCI, GDPR, or privacy in the States, and build that intersection so that I know what the various elements are. I know that I have to do this, 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 and this for HIPAA, but maybe a variation of that on PCI is this and this and this. So that I have a listing of all the elements that have to be accomplished through all the various compliance obligations, but all cross-referenced with each other, so that if I'm answering PCI questions, it may be something that I gathered the information from HIPAA, but yet it applies to PCI or it applies to GDPR. It's a matter of building that cross-referencing that allows you to have an approach to be able to see all the compliance obligations that you have. The biggest problem is not so much putting that together. It's when things change. So when a regulation changes or when an element inside of a regulation changes, that impacts not only one compliance obligation, but it may have an impact on another in a different way. That's where you spend a lot of your time and effort in trying to understand what the impact is, being able to finance the change in either capital or human resources, and then being able to apply that to the new regulation.
One of the things we've seen with compliance regulation in particular is it tends to be extraterritorial now. GDPR, not just about Europe, but about European data wherever it's used in the world. HIPAA has become very much the same. It's been exported from the US around the world. Prior to that, we had conflicts between BAL and SOX. Companies operating in multiple parts of the world, therefore, struggle to align the different types of compliance. Where do they find the information? Where do they get the assistance to make sure that not only are they aligning it properly, but more importantly, they can then bring their cybersecurity and their physical security into line?
That's a very good question. Too many companies take the approach that they'll read a regulation and say, that doesn't apply to me. Or they'll look at a regulation and they'll say, well, I can figure out what all this means. And in most cases, particularly when you may have an extraterritorial impact and you don't know it, take, for instance, a company in the United States that thinks they operate only in the United States may very well be subject to GDPR if they have, say, an e-commerce aspect. In many cases, means that you have to bring an expert in. Somebody from either a law firm that specializes in the compliance obligations or someone who deals with compliance obligations on a daily basis, bring them in on a professional basis and say, help us out with understanding what our obligations are. I've been exposed to compliance regulations for many years, but I still bring in an expert that says, hey, here's what you need to do. These are the elements that I see. This is how I think it's impacting your company. This is where I think you need to change what your infrastructure is or change the way you operate your processes, your applications, and things to meet those obligations. And in many cases, for instance, if I'm moving to an extraterritorial phase in my company, particularly if its legacy has been only in one territory, obviously that means an investment, and sometimes a very significant investment, in being able to reach the compliance that's necessary, say, for GDPR. That's a whole different way of approaching privacy and data privacy, because now we're looking at privacy as a right of an individual, where in other countries, the privacy is really a protection of the data and a security strategy only. That means there's an investment that has to be made. In many cases, that could be a very significant investment.
How do they choose that external advisor? If we look at the compliance route in a lot of organizations, new piece of compliance hits the desk. First response is to convene a committee. Generally, people with no real understanding of the actual implementation of this at a systems level. They go through the compliance legislation, they work out what they think the company needs to do, they hand it to IT. Anybody who's been in IT knows that the next thing that happens is everybody looks at this, tuts, shakes their head, says, can't do that, but I can probably get something close to it, never refers it back to the compliance committee, and everybody on both sides of the fence thinks they've done the best job. The problem is that this is not compliance.
No.
So what needs to change in terms of how those committees and how that instantiation is designed in order to ensure that not just the spirit of the law, but the letter of the law and the practical implementation of the law align?
The spirit of the law gets a lot of companies in jeopardy, because you're right, that first step going from that compliance committee to your IT department probably is not the right step. The right step is bringing the IT department and bringing that expert together, letting the expert do a gap analysis of the company and say, this is where you are deficient, or these are the applications and processes you have to change. If you think about it, that could be a significantly difficult and lengthy conversation. What are my gaps in this process? Or what are my gaps in my applications? Because you got to look at every application. You got to look at every infrastructure. You got to look at cloud infrastructure. You have on one side the IT group saying, yeah, I can do all these crafty little things. And you have the experts over here saying, but the crafty little things need to do this. And so you have to reach that balance between the two. The balance has to be weighted on the side of the compliance regulation, because you have to meet that regulation. The fines can be very significant. And as we're seeing with some of the organizations behind these regulations, they're starting to levy fines. Maybe not so much in some places and heavier in others, but they're starting to levy those. It's still a matter of finding a balance, figuring out how, once I understand what all those gaps are, and not saying I want to get close. Close doesn't win in this game. This is a game that you have to win by being right. And more than just being right, it has to be sustainable and resilient and flexible enough to change. You know the regulations are going to change. So if you spend millions of dollars or euros or pounds building this infrastructure that isn't flexible, then you're kind of roping yourself into a corner. You need to be able to change things, to be flexible. That's why I love things like software-defined networks or cloud infrastructure, where I can change things fairly rapidly, but yet still meet the compliance obligations that we have. The biggest problem with changes in regulations come with things like applications, where changing an application can be a lengthy and a costly experience for a company. There are a lot of things that you can do to mitigate the differences that you see between IT and the compliance committee, but it has to be led by somebody who knows what they're doing with compliance obligations, and particularly understands new changes and what that means. For instance, with PCI, when we changed from SSL and TLS 1.0 to the higher levels of TLS, huge impact on the industry, the financial industry. So making those decisions on what do I need to change, you only want to make the change once. You don't want to make the change and then find out, well, I didn't do the right thing. I need to make this change in this direction to do it right the first time. It's too expensive to do more than once.
I'd like to come back to change management and applications in a minute. But there's another curveball here, isn't there? No organization is bound by one single piece of compliance. So we spend all of this effort doing our gap analysis to meet compliance A. And then compliance B comes along. The danger here for a lot of organizations is they immediately, having completed A, forget that there are controls that has to have. And they focus on what B requires, which immediately takes them out of compliance potentially with A. How do we deal with the modeling of this?
There actually are some software modeling tools that you can use, the GRC tools that use UCF, the Uniform Compliance Framework. What you can say is, I need to be compliant with HIPAA, PCI, and GDPR. It will take the elements of all of those and merge them together, theoretically give you a model that says, here are all the elements that have to be completed to meet those three standards. Now, whether or not that is effective, I can't be the judge on that. That's something the people who come and do the measuring of your compliance will tell you whether or not you were effective. I would not do that without having some professional helping to guide the process. One of the elements that is important in that is the professional may, and I'm not talking necessarily about the compliance specialist, the person who really knows, they have to be an element in that, but there has to be someone who leads the compliance process in the organization, not the committee, not the IT department, but somebody who's responsible for the day-to-day delivery of compliance and understands as you're going through that compliance model that all of these elements have to be met, have to be measured, and has the responsibility of finding that balance between competing regulations, where one might be, I have to fix every patch from CVSS 4.0 up, and another might be, well, just do HISN criticals. If I had to make that decision, the only way I can mitigate that is by doing 4.0 and above, because then I capture both regulations. There has to be some mitigation that's done. Somebody has to make that call, and that individual has to be the one who's responsible for compliance. Again, it can be a difficult decision because it's not unlikely that different compliance rules are going to conflict with each other.
Where do we get those auditors from? If we look at our accounting systems, it's very easy to roll it out to the Big Four. Mm-hmm. If we look at our generic IT systems, we've tended to leave that to them as well. They'll give us a quick view of where we are. The problem here is that we're significantly outside their sphere of competency. And more importantly, unless we find an organization that understands the different types of compliance, then we'll get an auditor's report that focuses only on one of the multiple legs we're trying to deal with. Are there organizations out there that you've come across that have that breadth of knowledge? And if so, how do people engage with them?
There are, and there are boutique auditing firms that specialize in perhaps financial systems or retail systems or telecommunications or marketing. So they focus on those particular industries, which is actually very good because if I have somebody that focuses, say, on the financial markets, then they're going to understand that, okay, here's your territorial sphere, whether it be extra or intra-territorial, and here are the various regulations that are going to impact you. They understand that intersection, and they understand how to bring that all together into a compliance program. Cost is a factor. People tend to, at least in my historical background, people tend to want to minimize that cost. Sometimes the Big Four is not minimizing the cost, but they may give you a better product than somebody who has just gotten into the business or is purporting to be an expert but may not be as fully qualified as someone else. So you have to look at not only the capability of the firm, the cost of the firm, and the delivery times. How fast can I get an assessment, my gap assessment, down to my mitigation plan through my complete audit, my final audit, so that we can have a total product done in a relatively decent amount of time. That gives you planning time to figure out, well, how long do I then need to get to the point where I'm going to do the pre-assessment. Generally, we like to do a little bit of work ahead of time because we kind of know what the regulations are. We want to do some work ahead of time before the pre-assessment takes place to kind of minimize what that gap is. Then concentrate and focus on the gap. And I've seen gap assessments where you only had four or five things to complete, but yet they were very difficult things to complete. For instance, one gap might be, okay, well, your applications don't take this into effect. Think about what that means from a change perspective. That means going back and completely redesigning your application. Or even worse, and what I'm seeing a lot of today, particularly with GDPR, where I've got to understand where all that data is and I have to be able to locate that data and be able to report it to someone, to the owner of that data. If I have my data in multiple databases all over the world distributed in different places, the difficulty in trying to reach out to all those places and understand where that data is. Now, you can build metadata and indexes and things like that that can help you do that, but it's much simpler if I have a method of centralizing that data into a database that can allow me then to just go look one place and I know where that data is. But that change, that what makes sense means now I have to take all that data that's in various places around the world, put it in one place, and then write all my applications now. Instead of looking over here, look down here, and that's where my data is.
But you can't do that. We know, for example, in Germany, we have data sovereignty laws. We're seeing other parts of the world putting data sovereignty laws in place. So how do we get around that?
Well, you more than likely can't. That's where you have to go back to metadata indexing and understanding where the data is. So even though you have data sovereignty, that doesn't mean you don't know where it is. But your application has to be aware of that too. Where the real difficulty is does the application violate any of those sovereignty laws by looking here and here, trying to pull data from different places or pulling metadata from different places? And that's what makes it really difficult, is being able to say, well, if I'm pulling data from here and here, am I violating a sovereignty law by consolidating it up here? Don't know. That's where that expert comes in.
You talked about change management and apps earlier, and I said I'd come back to that. We've just been talking about apps. One of the things that we have seen over the last 5 years is the demand for greater cadence in the delivery of applications. People want the applications at the core of their enterprise to change almost as fast as the applications on their mobile phones. Setting aside the blatantly obvious security implications of that.
There is.
Just looking at the compliance issues here, if we're trying to now make these match multiple versions of compliance in multiple places, and as you've just said, making sure that that application doesn't pull data from two locations that in itself creates a compliance breach, how do we satisfy the business units? Because at the end of the day, no matter what we do as IT, in order to keep them safe, they are the paymaster.
They are, and this has been the struggle between compliance and security and application development that has gone on forever. The good old days, it was very simple. They write an application that's to be published on Friday, and they come to you on Thursday and say, are there any security problems? You say, yes, but, and then they publish it on Friday. But now, especially with agile development, it's posed a number of issues from compliance as well as security. Because not only now, as all these elements are built, they go through a fairly rapid sprint, you may not have the full product to look at that point in time, but you have bits and pieces. So you have to understand not only the larger picture of where they're going, to understand, well, compliance will be met not with this little bit, but it will be with this bit over here when it's developed. But this little bit contributes to this element of compliance, and then you can measure it and look at it. The problem is, and as you say, with such rapid development, is I have to figure out as a compliance or a security person, how do I measure that without impacting the scheduling? Sometimes that's difficult. Now, with more mature organizations, they'll build that measurement of security or compliance into the sprint so that they know I have 2 weeks to complete this, but it has to be measured at the end and gated by security before it can be released. But that's a level of maturity that's well up in many organizations because the focus is really on getting the functionality and the capability of the application put together. And then, okay, we'll check security and compliance later. It just can't be that way in an agile development. They have to march down the same path together. But you also, as a security and compliance person, and that may be two different people, but you also have to be mindful that you're a part of that team now. And that you're in the sprint process, you're as much as a part of that, bringing that product together, as you are just doing your own job. You can't wait till the end. Now, you can wait till the end to say final certification. Yes, all of our checks get made out. But you've got to march with them right down through each sprint to the end of the product.
One of the challenges, though, with compliance in that is it is fundamental before you even start to think. Even more fundamental than our normal approach to security. One of the things that I noticed at KubeCon in December back in Seattle was they were starting to talk about taking security elements and embedding that into the developer framework. much in the same way that we no longer ask developers to write a network driver. We no longer ask them to write a file systems driver. It's just part of your framework. How do we roll compliance so far into the front end of the program that actually it's part of those basic frameworks that every developer uses?
That's the epitome of good practice. If I can bake the element into a library or a call that they can make that handles the security or the compliance, that's great. Think about it. Right now, we're still trying to train people on secure coding. And the epitome of that is SQL injections are still live. Okay, we know that the SQL injections are still out there, 20 years since they started. Why are they still out there? Well, because we still don't do secure coding practices. So if I can bake that into the practice, or at least not given that, be part of the design process so that every developer is working with security and the compliance elements and understanding what those are before they write the first line of code. But we still have to train them to be able to code in a way that it's going to meet those obligations. Now, whether or not we have that baked into something that we can just add to it and call, that would be the epitome of the way to do it. But the real problem is what happens when there's a compliance or security change. Now that module has to change. You have to be cognizant of the fact that those things have to change. Otherwise, you continue to build things that are no longer compliant or no longer secure. That's an element that has to be taken into effect if you're going down that path. Compliance doesn't stay the same, and in many cases, it becomes much more complex on the next iteration. So you have to think about that. I'd love to see more organizations have that capability. At least that would go a long way to solving a lot of the just the irritating security issues that come out of the development of a system that could be fixed very easily.
That brings us to two final issues. The first is the board understands risk. Compliance is about risk. But when we talk about cybersecurity, we don't talk about risk. We talk about breaches and DDoS, things that just put the board to sleep. How do we rebuild that entire conversation so that everything is risk-focused, so that when the board makes a decision, it doesn't see itself just pouring money down the drain, because that's a lot of the perception of boards. It actually sees why it needs to spend this because of the damage to the business.
And that's a very important question for boards. Many boards, at least those that I've dealt with, are starting to see that they need to take that risk-based approach. They understand that, yeah, the details may be a little boring, but sometimes that's in the presentation of the details, not necessarily in the responsibility that's given to the board. The compliance elements on the board understand risk. And I think today they are beginning to understand, at least the organizations that either by law have a responsibility to understand security or compliance, or at least have matured enough, or worst case, have had something impact them in the past, and now they understand and have religion about security and compliance. They do understand that they need to have a risk-based approach to securing their organizations as well as understanding their compliance obligations. They take that pretty seriously, at least the boards that I've dealt with. The problem still is it takes money to secure and be compliant in an organization. And sometimes when they see the price of what that may mean, it becomes very uncomfortable that I have to divert money from a marketing campaign or wherever they're spending it to be able to meet my obligations to do business. But at the end of the day, they have to make that decision. Some boards will make that decision in the direction of security and compliance. Others will phase it out over time. Some may assume the risk. And I've seen boards just say, I'll assume that risk and move on. And many of them don't have a good day. And some don't get impacted in one way or another. You don't know what's going to happen. But I've seen security officers that have been very frustrated because they get no resources. I've seen others that the boards are very compliant and say, great, if you need that, we'll do it. Please watch the capital spends, and et cetera. I've seen other boards, particularly some of the larger financial organizations, where the security and compliance is so ingrained in the thinking of the boards that they write the checks to pretty much do anything.
So that leads us to a final, perhaps worrying question. Based on the conflict between compliance, the problems with change, and the fact this is not a static thing, the demand for greater agility in our applications and delivery, Can we ever say we're compliant?
The short answer is no. Unfortunately, compliance is something that has to be part of the corporate culture. It has to be baked into the development process. It has to be baked into the thinking of the business managers on what they're going to do in new products. So product managers have to think in that direction. But at the end of the day, it's that continual maintenance and sustainability of the process that you build that will determine how compliant you remain from period zero to period one. It's a difficult process to maintain, but it also means when you start to do all the other changes that you think about during the course of a year, whether I'm changing an application or changing the infrastructure, adding servers, building a new network out, you have to understand, as the individuals who are designing that process, the IT people or the development people or the security people, you have to understand what is the immediate impact on my compliance. It's almost impossible to be compliant over the course of an entire period between one audit and another audit, but the object has to be to stay at least enough compliant that you're going to be able to meet the obligations that, for instance, if I have to meet GDPR, who knows when somebody's going to come in and measure, am I really truly compliant with GDPR? So I have to maintain that. Now, there may be a change going on that could temporarily impact that, but I need to understand that. I need to be able to measure that and be able to say, here's what I can do. But at least I have to meet the minimum requirements and be able to say, I can do what I need to do as far as the compliance elements. At the end of the day, if somebody wants to figure out how to breach your company, it's going to be a difficult process to stop them. But yet, that's why we have security people try to build that defense in depth. I used to tell my board, they would ask me, can we be breached? Well, they certainly can make an attempt, but I've tried to make it as difficult as possible. That's a combination of a good security strategy as well as a good compliance strategy. Compliance, as we've said many times, is not security, but the security can help offset those elements that compliance doesn't cover to help secure the corporation. I don't look at the two strategies as being separate. I look at them as being complementary to each other. And I think what ties them together is that risk-based thinking. What threats can impact us and what risks do exist? And more importantly, where are gaps in our risk process? If I need to up my security or up my compliance, then I can do that at that point in time. All of that makes it more difficult for that breach to occur, but it can still be a challenge sometimes when someone's determined to target you and come after you.
There are very few jobs on this planet I think I would not want to do. I'm just adding compliance officer to that short list.
No, it really is fun. It's challenging, but it takes somebody with a very detailed, almost an auditor-like approach to be able to read the regulations and be able to, and this is probably the most important function of a compliance person, is I can read the regulation and interpret it for the IT person, the development person, the security person, the board of director, or a company manager. So it's that interpretation that helps them do the right job and helps us try to stay compliant between one audit and the next.
John, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ian. I appreciate it.